One of the things I really enjoy on this program is the chance to talk with people who are very good writers. And I tell you what, today is no exception. I'm really pleased to have an excellent writer with us today. Dennis McCann of Madison, freelance writer, recently retired from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And he worked there for 25 years or so. And he wrote golf columns as well for Wisconsin Golfer magazine. And they've been collected in a book called Rough Stuff. It's published by Killarney Golf Media. And I'm really enjoying reading this book, especially at this time of year. As someone who professes to be a golfer himself, I enjoy playing, but can't do a lot of playing this time of year, so it's fun to read about it. And as I looked through the book, I thought, you know what? This book is not only for golfers, but for just people who enjoy learning about other people and about interesting situations and also just appreciating good writing. So Dennis is our guest today as we talk with him about golf and the people who play it, and about his book, Rough Stuff. And certainly you are invited to join in. If you have a question or a comment, maybe you've got a great story of your own that you want to share, and we'd love to hear that story as well. I know Dennis would. He spent a lot of his book, interviewed and talked with other people and shared their experiences with him on the golf course. Some of them related to golf, and some didn't have a whole lot to do with golf, as a matter of fact. But you can join in, we certainly appreciate your input at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. If you're in the Madison area, you can reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions and comments. Dennis McCann, welcome. Nice to have you with us.
Well, thank you. It's good to be back here again.
Yeah, it's nice to have you back. You in the book, you said you hadn't broken 80 or 18 holes. And, you know, it's not a matter of not trying, though. You're kind of an ardent golfer.
I play a lot of golf. And I was surprised that when the collection was put together, how many times I'd mentioned that it was... So it must be more of a goal in my life than I was aware of. But I got close a couple times this summer and couldn't quite do it.
So. Oh, close this summer. Well, that's
a couple 81s, and you know, you're right there. But two shots at that point is a lot different than 198. So.
Oh yeah. Well, how did you come up with your ideas for these stories?
Well, it's sort of like the columns I already did for the newspaper. They come from all sorts of places. When people know that you write this kind of a column, you get emails or calls, and somebody will mention something, or I'll see something in the newspaper that just sort of intrigued me, like the one about the caddy in Eagle River who was in his late 80s or 90s or something. Mm-hmm. And he had been a caddy in the 1930s in Eagle River, back when it was quite a... an active place, as you would, you know, back when they had the gambling and it was a real exotic place for the swells from Chicago to go. And he wound up caddying for the mayor of Chicago, Ed Kelly, and his bodyguard would be there. And they would give this caddy the gun to carry. And sometimes they'd tee up the ball and have him shoot it off the tee. And he was telling these stories because they were collecting the history of Eagle River. So I called him and talked about that and wrote a column. And so it's wherever you can find inspiration.
You know, I read that, and I thought, my goodness, shooting the golf. I don't know if you're going to get away with that anymore.
And he mentioned that there were a lot of things that they did in those days that you couldn't do today.
Well, that was a wonderful story. What are people who golf, what's your impression of people who golf? I mean, you must like people who golf, but is there a kind of person who golfs?
I think there is to a certain extent. You know, I belong in our club in Bayfield, where there's a lot of like-minded people, and mm-hmm. You think that everybody is like that. And then you travel around and you meet other people playing, and there's one column in here where I mentioned playing in Milwaukee when I was a newspaper man and got teamed up with a former Milwaukee police officer who was a big fan of Chief Breyer, who had no use for newspaper men, and went the whole round without ever telling him what I did.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, I've had some great stories like that myself. I golfed once in Los Angeles at the Rose Bowl, time of the Rose Bowl, and played with another guy here, Andy Porter from Madison, and went to a course, and we're paired up with a couple of guys and introduced ourselves, and the guys said, oh, I listen to you every week on Calling All Pets. And, you know, here he is, a guy from Los Angeles, and happened to listen to the Calling All Pets program. And so we spent the first four or five holes talking about his dog. He's not this dog. I got these problems with the dog. So it's amazing sometimes some of the connections that you can meet and make on a golf course.
Well, I've played courses all over the state and beyond and been paired up with a lot of people who I've never met before.
Yeah.
And by and large, it's always a good time. I mean, it's once in a while you'll hit a clunker that just didn't work out. But for the most part, they're people that you can you have something in common just to start with.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Dennis McCann, our guest today, author of the book Rough Stuff. We're talking with him about golf and the people who play it. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. Or in the Madison area, you can reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call. Question about the book, or maybe you've got an experience of your own that you would like to share. Feel free to join in. We'd love to hear from you. There are some strange, you have some strange stories in the book. There's one kind of sad in a way.
Which is why we both laugh when we hear it, right?
About an errant tee shot.
Yes.
At the Eagle River Golf Club.
This was also in Eagle River, and a man was playing by himself and teed off, and the groundskeeper tells the story later, and he said it made a kind of a funny noise when it landed in the grass off the fairway. And so they went over to help the man look, and the reason it had made a funny sound was because it didn't hit a tree, but it hit a newborn fawn, just hours old, right on top of the head, and unfortunately killed the fawn, which was, as I said, a perfectly preserved specimen, except for the fact that it had just been killed. And so the greenskeeper, being industrious, took this fawn home and put it in the freezer and arranged to get permission through the DNR to have it stuffed. And so he took it to a taxidermist and paid to have it mounted and put in a little display case, as you'll find in northern Wisconsin, and presented it to the Eagle River Visitor Center.
Yeah.
And when I wrote about this, I referred to the poor sap who hit this shot and later heard from him, and he said, I'm not a sap. I didn't feel good about it.
But he owned up to it.
He did, yes. And he said, as like any golfer would, he pointed out it wasn't that bad a shot. It just
strayed a little bit.
I'm not sure the fawn would agree, but it was.
No, and it cost, what, $1,000 or so?
$1,200 to have it mounted, yeah.
So that's a great story as well. You know, another one that I remember from the book is a story about Michael Murphy.
Oh, Golf in the Kingdom, yes.
Who wrote the book, Golf in the Kingdom. And I remember reading that book.
did you understand it?
Well, I read, you know, the first half.
Right.
I followed along with that. And that was a lot of fun. The second half made absolutely no, well, it made no sense. Well, no, yeah, it made no sense to me at all.
Right. It gets into there's many mystical books about golf and all of these things that can happen. And Murphy's book is like that. And I interviewed him in Milwaukee before a talk and went to hear the talk. And the Shivas Iron Society, this cult that has grown up around the book, was there to attend the hearing. And they brought their bottle of whiskey along to salute him with Scotch whiskey. And there's a certain amount of hocus pocus there, but it's been this very successful book and movie eventually. And I just didn't buy into it all. But
well, I really didn't buy into it. What was the book? What was the movie? I'm sorry.
Golf in the Kingdom?
Golf in the Kingdom. I'm just trying. I didn't see the movie. So
it was. Was that the one with Will Smith? I'm blanking now.
Might have been.
I didn't think that the book, it didn't engage me as much as a lot of other golf books I read.
No, that's for sure. Well, what was Michael Murphy like?
Murphy was an interesting character because he was the founder of the Esalen Institute in California. And so he was into that whole California mind mystical thing on a whole number of levels before he got into golf. And this sort of this golf cult got, as he admits, bigger than he ever imagined. And he doesn't even play much golf anymore, but he still sort of rides this crest. And
and that book still sells.
It still sells, right. Right.
I was absolutely amazed. But just to give people an idea of the kind of mystical things that supposedly happen to golfers. Now, most of these things have never happened to me on a golf course. But the guy who claimed he saw a ball marker.
That starts to glow and guides his shot.
And he sees it, and he's several hundred yards away from the green, and he sees the ball marker, and it's a dime.
Right, right. Well, and he also points to the fact when Harvey Pienick, the great Texas golf instructor, died, and then Ben Crenshaw won the Masters right after that. Now, was that channeling above and beyond, or was that just a coincidence?
And then the rainbow.
The rainbow, right.
Right over his head at the end.
That was over Davis Love, I think.
That was over Davis Love. That was another instance as well. Well, as a golfer, do you ever get into those grooves yourself?
I had a little run this summer that was really a lot of fun, and I felt like I wasn't myself for a while. And I think maybe it was because the course was so dry and there was a lot more roll or something. But that was when I was getting tantalizingly close to my target. And then, later in the summer, you remember who you are and you can't get below 90 anymore.
Well, it is an interesting thing when you're on a golf course. I've had a few cases like this myself where suddenly you can look ahead and say, okay, I'm going to put the ball there or between those trees or whatever, and you have all the confidence in the world, and it happens.
Right.
And the next day you think, okay, well, I can't wait to get back out the next day, and it's gone.
Right. That happens more to other people that I'm playing with than to me. But yes.
Dennis McCann, our guest today, as we talk with him about golf and the people who play it. He is the author of the book Rough Stuff. It's published by Killarney Golf Media. You can join in with your questions and comments or your stories as well at 1-800-642-1234. Or if you're in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call with your stories or questions or comments. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking with Dennis McCann, Larry Mueller here. Dennis is the author of the book Rough Stuff. And it's about golf and the people who play it. And, it's in a way it helps if you're a golfer to read these stories. But tell you what, you don't have to be a golfer to enjoy the book. Questions or comments or experiences to share, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Or in the Madison area, you can reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions or with your comments or your experiences. You write about someplace in the book, you write about and this is a question that comes up, I think, once in a while on the golf course. If you're going to play, if you had one chance to play with a group of people, your foursome, who would the three people be that you would want to play with?
I did a column on that and asked a bunch of folks, and I kind of took a dodge on my own in this because I just had to end it with a joke. But everybody would like to play with Arnold Palmer, and he would be first on my list, certainly. I think I've read a lot about Palmer, and he seems like he's the most welcoming guy, that he would bring you in. You'd have to gamble because he plays for money, but you could have a good time doing that. I'd throw Fred Couples into the group just because I've always liked Fred. And probably quoting a friend of mine who said, I put David Faraday in because everybody likes a funny Irishman. That would be a good group.
Oh, that would be, yeah. Faraday would be way high on my list. He's a funny guy, a great writer, and I just read his golf magazine this issue. I just got – he was just back from Iraq.
Yes, he went over with the troops, right.
With a group of guys, and funny and sad stories in there as well. So he'd be a great guy. But non-golfers, I wish I could play around again with my dad. That would be
– Several people mentioned that.
That would be the one person I'd love to have a chance to play around with again. Randy in Eau Claire, it's your turn. Hi, Randy.
How you doing?
Good. Thank you for calling.
So I got a quick story for you. I think you'll find it interesting. I'll try to keep it fast.
Okay.
I'm a golfer, and so is my brother. Our grandfather died, and his widow invited me to look through his things, and I found some Sports Illustrated from the late 50s with a set of four articles by Arnold Palmer, How I Play Golf. And so I said, well, I'd like to have those, and I took them. And then later on, I gave them as a gift to my brother. And he decided to get them autographed. And so he called Arnold Palmer Golf in Old Latrobe, Pennsylvania, and was chatting with the woman in the office and was told that Mr. Palmer wasn't in the office. And as he was on the phone, the woman said, well, wait a minute, he just walked in. And, 30 seconds later, he's on the phone with Arnold Palmer.
Oh, man.
And Mr. Palmer said that he remembered writing the articles, and if my brother took the time to send them, he would be happy to autograph them. And so my brother sent them on to him in Pennsylvania, and he autographed them and returned them with another picture for me. And, my brother has this framed set of Arnold Palmer prints, which is, I'm sure, one of a kind.
Yeah.
And, my grandfather had passes to the Masters for 40 years, so I've been to the par 3 contest, and I saw Palmer, Gary Player, and Jack Nicklaus all together, and they were, 5 feet from me. I just think golf is a great gift because it really can bring people together generationally, and everybody faces the same challenges, and that's really all I have to say.
Well, I really appreciate the call. Dennis, comment from you.
Well, I think that it goes to the reputation of Arnold Palmer as being someone who relates to fans more than perhaps other country club golfers might. He was the one who sort of brought golf to the masses. Happened around the time that they started televising golf, but he was somebody people could relate to because he didn't have the textbook swing. He had that sort of physical lunge at it, and he's always hitching his pants and smoking his cigarettes at the time. But he just really captivated the public, and I think that he became everybody's favorite.
Yeah, and really, just a great guy. The persona on the course, that's the way he was is off the course as well.
That's what everybody says.
As Randy's letting us know right now. Randy, that's a great story. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, appreciate that story. He also mentioned the Masters golf tournament, which is, for those people who don't golf, it's big deal. What's the Masters? But
it'd be like a Packers Super Bowl. Going to a Packers Super Bowl. If you're a golfer, you want to go to the Masters.
Yeah, and you've had a chance to go.
I've been to the Masters twice. I had my brother does travel, incentive travel and corporate travel, and he took a group to the Masters in 1999. And I was talking to him about it afterwards, and he said that on Sunday, he just mentioned in passing that he had a couple of passes because people went home early. And I said, okay, so if I'm standing there next year, no guarantees, just standing there, and you have an extra pass, could I get in? And he said, sure. So I flew down from Milwaukee with a friend. We met another friend in Atlanta, and the three of us drove over. And we were standing there on Sunday, and all of us got in. And it was one of those places where you walk in, and you can't look around, and you say, I can't believe I'm here. The stories about the Masters are legends because – it's everybody remembers their first time there or the only time there. I did get to go back the next year and took my wife and also got in for the Sunday round. So if it never happens again, it's happened twice. And I can live with that.
And that's a pretty good deal. Well, Judy in Waukesha is online. So let's go to Judy next. Hi, Judy. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I have always enjoyed Dennis's writing and own a book on day trips that he's done that's been invaluable. But I've had great difficulty in getting the book Rough Stuff locally. I wonder if he might have a suggestion.
Oh, okay.
Well, thank you for the kind words. It's available from Schwartz Bookstores in Milwaukee. Barnes & Noble and Borders have the book. Or you can call Amazon.com, obviously. Or you can contact the magazine itself. Do you want me to give the 800 number?
Yeah, go ahead and give that.
It's Wisconsin Golfer Magazine. It's 800-685-0036, or you can go to wisgolfer.com, and the book is available there.
Thank you very much.
And I have a box in the trunk of my car most of the time.
So. Mayfield is kind of a distance from Waukesha.
Thanks, Judy.
All right.
And we should say you live in Madison and you have a place in Bayfield.
My main residence is Bayfield, and we were in Madison. This is our version of going south for the winter. It's for Badger basketball mostly. And
yeah, absolutely. 800-6, and that 800 number again is 800, let me see if I've got this right, 685-0036.
Yes.
All right. All right, Judy, thank you very much for calling. And we'll take some more calls. You can join in, too, if you got a story to tell or experience to share or a question. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. Joe in De Pere is next. Joe, hi. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. Dennis, I enjoy your column. I am a subscriber to Wisconsin Golfer magazine.
Thank you.
I want to share a story. I've been playing golf for 40-some years, and about probably 10 years ago or so, I decided to teach my grandson how to play. And we were on probably the last hole, and he hits his ball into the sand trap. And he walks up to the sand trap, and he grabs the rake, and he starts to get his ball out of there. I said, "What are you doing?" And he said, "Well, isn't that what this is for?" I said, "No." I said, "Brandon, you have to hit that." And he looks at the ball. He looks at the rake. He says, "Grandpa, I don't think I can swing this thing." And I have a lot of stories about playing golf with him when they're so little.
Well, I just read a book about the history of gambling in golf, Betting on Birdies, it's called. And there was a famous guy, I think his name was Mysterious Montague, who actually would bet, and he would use a shovel, a rake, and I think it was a soda bottle or a baseball bat or something. And those would be his three clubs, and he would take anybody on.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to play him.
No.
Thanks, Joe. That's a great story.
Thank you.
Appreciate it very much. I enjoy that very much. Keith in Port Edwards, your turn. Hi, Keith.
Yes, hello, Larry. I've been golfing for a long time, and I guess I've experienced three incidences of golf rage. And I guess when I was 16, I was walking up a fairway, and a tee shot from a parallel fairway line drive me right, well, didn't me, but my golf bag. It scared me so much that, and I had golfed before, that I knew that there was etiquette of, you know, yelling four. And I wanted to make my point, so I boldly walked toward this person who walked toward me. And the man just kind of put his hands up, and then he pointed to his throat. And the poor man, he had a laryngectomy.
Oh.
And it just melted me. again, I think sometimes when things like that happen, there is kind of a fear response and a rage response.
Comment, Dennis?
Well, I think that anybody who's played much golf has experienced those close calls or worse, and your first instinct is to get very upset about it. Sometimes you hit those shots yourself.
Yeah.
It's common courtesy to yell four. Usually you do it. It's unfortunate when you don't. But.
Wow.
May I tell you another incident?
Sure, go ahead.
My father taught me how to golf. He was a farm boy that caddied at a pretty exclusive private country club, Barrington, Illinois. And there were pros that played golf there. Well, he found out that there was a pro that was infamous in not paying his caddies. And Dad happened to draw him. And so that the end of the game, this pro started to walk to the 19th tee, and my dad pulled his driver out of the bag and started to walk. Well, a lot of the people and his comrades always knew, at least the golfers knew, that this guy didn't pay, and the guy got kind of shook, and his three other people in the foursomes just laughed, and the guy came up with the money.
Well, that takes a lot of crust on the part of the young guy, the young caddy, to do it. But it's even worse for somebody not to stiff a caddy.
I was a caddy as a kid in Janesville many years ago, and I was probably undersized for the job because on Sundays you'd have to carry two bags.
Yeah.
And I'd get one couple, and I still remember their names and won't use it, but we'd start down the fairway, and he'd hit to the right, and she'd hit to the left, and he's on me to get the ball. And I'm carrying both bags, and I was not destined to make a living as a caddy.
Caddies, there are some caddies who make a very, very, very good living.
Yes, there's a couple of courses now. The high-end courses at Kohler where you can use caddies, and in one of the courses you have to have caddies. And I think that it's unfortunate that that job isn't around for kids anymore. Yeah. Everybody takes motor carts because the revenue goes to the pro shop at that point.
Yeah.
I think that it's valuable work. There still are caddies in various courses, and there's the caddy program at the university. You can get a scholarship for the Chick Evans program. That's a very good deal. But it's a lost opportunity for a lot of people.
Yeah, it really is. And I've had a chance to play those Kohler courses and have played with a caddy. And actually, in work that I've been fortunate enough to do, I've done a lot of work in the Caribbean. And so I played courses down there. And oftentimes you have caddy down there. And it's a lot of fun to play with a caddy.
It is. It's, for me, it was kind of intimidating the first time because here's somebody who's I'm in this sort of this master role, and I'm not used to that in life where somebody is taking direction from me. And then I figured out I wasn't really giving any directions. They were clubbing me and telling me what to do.
And telling you what to hit and when to hit it and so forth. But I remember the first time playing at Kohler where the night before, I went through my bag and I took out all of the old balls and I tried to make the bag as light as I possibly could. So that the caddy wouldn't break his back carrying it around.
I was there to play the Irish course 2 years ago, and one of the guys in our group who I had not met before showed up with a great big staff bag, one of those heavy pro bags with all the clubs and all the stuff in it. And the caddy looked at it and said, "I'm not carrying that." And he got a light Sunday bag, moved the clubs into it, and that's what he carried.
Oh, boy. Stephen in Cornucopia, your turn. Hi, Steve.
When golfing comes up, I have always a fun little story to share. People come in the shop once in a while, and I'll tell them, well, I'm probably one of the few people in Wisconsin that's ever gone 18 holes with in the same foursome with Arnold Palmer and Sam Snead. And, of course, I wasn't playing golf, but I too was a caddy down there and at Triple I during the Miller High Life Open, 1958 or so.
Wow.
And both of them were in the foursome, and I, of course, was caddying for Art Wall Jr., who was not anywhere near that caliber. But both of those guys were absolutely wonderful folks to walk around with and chit-chat a little bit. They're very nice. It's a good memory.
That's an amazing memory.
Man, did you get them to sign a card?
It just wasn't.
Yeah.
No.
Caddies don't really ask that.
Yeah,
I know it. It's but it'd be awfully tempting.
Well, I tell you the truth, I didn't think much about it at the time.
Yeah,
They were.
You're so intent on the moment. I mean that had to be a wonderful experience.
Yeah, it really was. Fun program.
Thanks, Steve.
You bet. Bye bye.
I'll tell you another little story about just a story of my own. Playing with somebody of note, or almost. I was at Whistling Straits, my wife and I, and I was going to play, and she was going to go to the spa. And the night before, we were there, stayed overnight there, and we were at one of the restaurants at Kohler. And there sat, we looked over, and my wife said, that looks like George Wendt. Norm from Cheers. And the movie from the television program Cheers, and he was there with a couple of younger guys with him, and I said, gee, it'd be fun if I got paired up with them tomorrow. Well, sure enough, the next morning I get over to Whistling Straits, and who am I paired up with but George Wendt and his son's friend, who had been Dennis the Menace in the movie. So these kids were seniors in high school. So George, we shook hands and all this, and then George says, "Where's the cart?" And I said, "Well, there's no writing. You have to walk." And he said, "No, I don't have to walk." He said, "I'll come out and join you guys on the 15th hole or so and walk in with you." And so I played with his son and with his son's friend, who were both on their high school golf team, and they played from the tips, and at Whistling Straits, and they were right even par we started on the back nine, and they were at even par. Oh no, we started on the front nine. They were at even par through the first nine holes, and running right at par until the 15th, and then George came out, and then they But he got on them, and they immediately were like, triple bogey, triple bogey, triple bogey all the way in. But that was a great experience.
There's so many kids who can hit the ball forever these days with the new equipment, and these kids are bigger and stronger, and it's really sort of depressing when you get up.
Yeah. You know, I could hardly see them from my tee. You know, at some of the tees at Whistling Straits are a long way back. Well, you have some other stories in the book, Dennis, that are great stories. If you could replace Arnold Palmer as the king of golf, what would your rules for the kingdom be?
I was kind of in a snit the day I wrote that column. I would end overpriced golf. No golf should cost $200 a round. Or if it's $200 a round, they have to throw in a free shirt. If it's $100 a round, you get a free cap. You're wearing their advertising anyway. No stroke and distance for out of bounds. You can take your choice, and on and on. So we can improve this game a lot.
We could improve the game an awful lot. What do you think about these? Yeah, really. I mean, what does it cost now to play some of? A course like Pebble Beach in California is like $400 or $500, isn't it?
I'm not sure what it is today, but a few years ago I was out there, and when I was still with the newspaper, and I had said to the paper that I should play that course and write a piece about it. And so they said they would pay for me, and I would pay for my wife, of course. And so I arranged with Pebble Beach to get a tee time. But because I wasn't staying at the lodge, you get the worst tee times. So it would have been a late afternoon tee time, what they call a non-guaranteed finish time. And it was $330 at the time, and I said, I'm not going to pay that and not get to play the last beautiful holes.
Yeah.
And so I didn't. I passed on the opportunity.
I would love to be able to do that. Well, of all the stories that you've written, some favorite characters that come to mind?
Well, one of the stories that I really like in here was I was in Atlanta, and I was with a photographer from our paper, Dale Golden, who was a wonderful guy. Dale didn't golf and didn't understand why I wanted to go visit the grave of Bobby Jones, the greatest amateur golfer ever. And so we had spent 2 days in Atlanta and had a little time to kill before we had to go to the airport. So I persuaded him. We went to Oakland Cemetery, which is a great cemetery in Atlanta, really historic, as you'd expect, all the Civil War graves. Margaret Mitchell is buried there. I think there's 7 or 8 Atlanta governors and mayors and Georgia governors, rather. So we got directions to the grave of Bobby Jones, who, for people who don't know, was the greatest amateur golfer ever and sort of the founder of the Masters, and he's revered in golf circles. So we went to the grave and found out that it was mowed real tight like a putting green, and they had 18 plantings around there, trees and shrubs representing the 18 holes at Augusta National. He's got a nice stone for him and his wife. And the custom is, and I didn't know that, you leave a golf ball at the site, and that's supposed to be good for your game. It's a good luck charm. And I didn't have any golf balls.
Oh, no.
So Dale did not want to humor me anymore and go and find a sleeve so I could come back and leave one there. So my game has suffered ever since.
He's still haven't broken 80.
And we were leaving the cemetery and saw a sign pointing to Margaret Mitchell's grave. And I said, Dale, do you want to go see that? And he said, frankly, I don't give a damn.
Oh, that is a great, great story. Well, the Masters, talking about Bobby Jones, I have one more Masters story that I'd like to share. Mark Lundy, who works for the Capital Times, is a good friend of mine, and he and his wife were playing golf, went on a golf vacation, and they were playing. I don't recall exactly where they were playing now, but I think it might have. Well, it doesn't make any difference. So they were 150 miles away from Augusta, and they afterwards they went to the 19th hole or whatever, and they sat down and they met up with this couple, and they were talking to this couple for a long time, and the woman says, "Well, we have to go back to Augusta because my father insists we go every year to the Masters," and they didn't really want to go anymore. They were tired of going. And Mark said, "Well, we would go." And she said, "You would?" And she said, "Wait just a minute." And she got her cell phone out, called her dad, and told her dad that Mark and his wife were coming, and give them the tickets for the tournament. And he only lived two blocks or something away from the said so. And then she said, let him park their car, too, in your driveway. So they got free tickets to the Masters Golf Tournament. They parked within a block, I think he said, of the tournament grounds. And all because they stopped at this bar and got into a discussion with some total strangers. And that was the story.
Most people pay a lot of money to go to the Masters.
Most people pay a lot of money. Well, I tell you what, we have Damien online from Eau Claire. So let's go to Damien. Damien, hi, thank you for calling. Damien, are you? Let me try that again. Damien, hello.
Hello, how are you doing?
Great, thanks for calling.
My pleasure. I just wanted to make a tip of the hat to Manuel De La Torre right from the state here. And I had the privilege of being a caddy for years in the early 60s at the Milwaukee Country Club and then working in the pro shop with him. And he was somebody who would only play one or two tour events a year, including the PGA, but there were a couple, three times where he would actually be finishing on national television in a foursome with Palmer, Nicklaus, or so on. And even more impressive to me was that on Thursday mornings he would give free golf lessons to the caddies, and we'd be out there in droves at 6 in the morning. And I learned things from him that to this day I am a pretty decent golfer, basically because he just so simply taught such a beautiful, easy swing. And I believe he was the first recipient of Golf Digest Teacher of the Year Award when they first made it.
He is in his 80s now in Milwaukee and still is regarded as one of the top teaching professionals in the country.
And
he doesn't charge a lot of money. He works with some of the professionals, but he works with anybody who will want to learn, and he's got a very simplified swing and is a real gentleman of the game.
Just a marvelous man, and he and his father, he was born in Spain, and when he was about 5 or 6, they put on a golf expedition for the King of Spain, so he's a remarkable man.
Yeah, it's a great story. Thank you, Damien.
Thank you. Yeah,
appreciate it very much. Lots of remarkable people in the game of golf.
And it's a lot of fun, too, because on the day I turned 50, I walked 50 holes of golf, and it doesn't matter what you shoot. I mean, I shot a 259 for the day, but you can have a lot of fun out there without taking it too seriously.
Well, and your book is a lot of fun as well, Dennis, and
I
thank you so much. Again, copies of the book you can get
the big bookstores, of course, Schwartz in Milwaukee, Amazon, or wisgolfer.com, wisgolfer.com, and their 800 number is
800-685-0036. I have my glasses on. 800-685-0036. It's a fun book to read. And Dennis, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me on, Larry.
I really appreciate it very much. Dennis McCann of Madison, recently retired from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel after more than 25 years, wrote golf columns for Wisconsin Golfer magazine. And his new book is called Rough Stuff. It's published by Killarney Golf Media. I highly recommend it. I hope take a look at it. You're going to enjoy the articles in that book. And I think you have another golfer coming up. He likes to think of himself as a golfer, Gary Knowles, but we won't talk golf with him maybe a little, but mostly we're going to be talking about a new contest to name the best towns in Wisconsin. What about your town? You might want to join in and put in a vote for your town as we visit with him. Coming up next here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.